Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
It's great to be back, ready for another deep dive.
You know, I was thinking about how we usually frame the story of human evolution. It's always this story of upgrades, right? Mm. We split from Neanderthals and Denisovans, and we just assume we got the better hardware, faster processors, better graphics, you know.
That is the standard narrative,
Yeah.
We see natural selection as this relentless march toward optimization, a better, faster, stronger human.
Exactly. But the research we are looking at today just flips that script completely upside down.
It really does.
We're doing a deep dive into a genetic change that happened, what, about 600,000 years ago, right after we split from our archaic cousins. And it doesn't look like an upgrade at all. It looks like we broke something.
Broke is a provocative way to put it, but chemically speaking, you're not wrong. We're looking at a critical enzyme in the brain that in us, in modern humans, is just significantly less stable.
Less stable and less active than the version in Neanderthals.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the real hook for me. Evolution didn't just let this broken version slide through. It seems it aggressively selected for it. We actively downgraded our own brain chemistry.
Which poses this massive riddle. I mean, why would nature favor a mutation that reduces the activity of a piece of essential infrastructure?
And the really strange part, how could this metabolic throttle possibly make us more competitive? Especially when it comes to how females acquire resources.
It's a puzzle. And the answers involve humanized mice, a high-tech smart house for rodents, and some really uncomfortable questions about the trade-off between survival and, well, intelligence.
It really challenges what fitness even means.
It does.
So let's get into it. We are analyzing a really fascinating paper titled The Activity and Expression of Adenylosuccinate Lyase Were Reduced During Modern Human Evolution, Affecting Brain and Behavior.
It's a heavy title, but the science is just thrilling. And we have to give credit where it's due. This was a huge collaboration.
Right, between the Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology, the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, and the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology.
And looking at that author list, you see some absolute heavyweights. Svante Paabo is in the mix.
Nobel laureate himself.
Yeah. And lead authors like Shang-Chun Zhu and Hugo Zimberg. I mean, these are basically the Avengers of Neanderthal DNA.
They really are. The people who figured out how to read the instruction manuals of our extinct relatives.
They're the leaders in this field, no question.
Okay, so let's start with the protagonist of this story, this enzyme. ADSL, adenylosuccinate lyase. I'm just going to say ADSL.
Good call.
What's its day job?
ADSL is a factory worker. It sits on the assembly line of something called purine biosynthesis.
Okay, purine biosynthesis. That sounds important, but also like something I definitely slept through in high school biology. Break that down for us.
You should care a lot. Purines are the absolute foundation of life. They are the chemical building blocks that make up your DNA and RNA. You literally cannot build a single new cell without them.
So fairly critical. If the factory stops, you stop being biology and start being like geology.
Precisely. But there's a second function that's just as vital. Purines are crucial for energy transfer. You've heard of ATP, right?
Energy currency of the cell, the stuff that powers my muscles.
Exactly. The A in ATP stands for adenosine. That's a purine. So this enzyme, ADSL, it catalyzes two specific steps to make these purines. Without it, you lose DNA replication and you lose the ability to, you know, fuel your cells.
Okay, so you need it to build the blueprint of life and you need it to keep the lights on. Now, tell me about this break that happened 600,000 years ago.
Well, if you look at the genetic code of a Neanderthal or a Denisovan or pretty much any other primate, the ADSL enzyme looks a certain way. It's the standard model. But if you look at us, modern humans, there's a tiny difference. A single amino acid substitution.
Just one.
Just one little change. At position 429 in the protein chain, an alanine was replaced by a valine. It's called the A429V mutation.
And how common is this new version today?
It's effectively universal. The researchers checked a database of 1.6 million human genomes. Do you want to guess how many people had the old ancestral version?
I'm guessing not many, if we're doing a deep dive on it.
One single person out of 1.6 million. That means this mutation is fixed. It's swept through the entire human population and it's here to stay.
Wow. Okay, so we all have it. But earlier you said this version is worse. How do we know that? Maybe valine is just cooler than alanine.
It's not about coolness, it's about structural integrity. So previous biochemical studies showed that this specific swap makes the enzyme structure less stable. It's wobbly. It just does its job less efficiently than the Neanderthal version.
This is a part I really struggle with. If I went to a mechanic and he replaced my fuel pump with one that was wobbly and less efficient, I'd be upset. In a medical context, a slow enzyme is a bad thing, isn't it?
Oh, usually, yes. And we have clinical data on this. If you have a severe deficiency in ADSL leg, if the enzyme barely works at all, it's a rare and devastating genetic disorder.
What does it cause?
It leads to intellectual disability, autism, and often very aggressive behavior in patients.
Wow. So if you break it completely, it's catastrophic.
Correct. But we aren't talking about a total failure here. We're talking about a moderate reduction, a functional downgrade that every healthy human has.
So the big question for the researchers was, if severe deficiency is so bad, why is this moderate reduction advantageous? What does it actually do to our brains?
Exactly. And that's a hard question to answer because you can't exactly clone a Neanderthal to compare.
No. Ethics boards tend to frown on that.
They do.
And you can't really experiment on living humans to see how their brain metabolism affects their foraging skills.
Also frowned upon. So the researchers turned to the gold standard of genetic modeling, mice. But they had to do something very, very specific. They used CRISPR to create humanized mice.
Humanized mice. Yeah. It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie. Do they start paying taxes?
Not quite. It means they went into the mouse genome and they edited the mouse's ADSL gene to match the modern human version. They put in that specific A429V mutation.
So they gave the mouse the wobbly human enzyme.
They did. And to be incredibly rigorous, they also tweaked one other amino acid nearby just to make sure the rest of the protein matched the general mammalian baseline.
This is a perfectly clean comparison.
Exactly. You have one group of mice with the modern human enzyme and their litter mates with the wild type or ancestral enzyme.
Okay, the stage is set. We have the human mice and the ancestor mice. Step one, check the engine. What happened to their chemistry?
They used mass spectrometry to look at the metabolites in seven different organs. They were looking for the substrates of the enzyme.
Okay, let's go back to your factory analogy.
Yeah.
If ADSL is the worker on the line.
Right. So if that worker is slow or he takes too many breaks because he's unstable, the parts on the conveyor belt start to pile up behind him.
Okay.
Those parts are the substrates chemicals called SACAR and S-ADO.
So if the human enzyme is slower, we should see a pileup of these chemicals.
And that is exactly what they found. But, and this is the really fascinating part, not everywhere. The traffic jam was massive in the brain and the liver.
And not in other places.
But in the muscles. Barely noticeable.
What's the difference?
Because the brain naturally has very few of these workers to begin with. The expression of ADSL in the brain is inherently low. So if you replace your few workers with slow ones, the backlog gets huge immediately.
But the muscles are full of workers, so a slight drop in efficiency doesn't matter as much.
You got it.
So we have a humanized brain that's just swimming in these backed up chemicals.
That's right.
A metabolic traffic jam.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of stressful for the brain. Does that backup actually change anything?
You'd think it might be toxic. So the next logical question was, does this chemical change affect behavior? To test this, they use something called the IntelliCage.
I read about this. This is not your average pet store cage, is it?
Oh, far from it. The IntelliCage is like a smart home for mice. It's a large automated environment where they live in a social group. No humans grabbing them, poking them, stressing them out.
So it's like Big Brother for rodents.
Basically, yeah. To get water, the mice have to learn to poke their noses into specific corners. The system sees their microchip, recognizes the individual mouse, and opens a little door so they can drink.
So they set up a challenge.
A water competition. They started restricting when water was available. First 12 hours a day, easy. Then 8 hours. Then they cranked it down to just 1 hour a day.
That creates real scarcity.
Yeah.
You have to hustle to get a drink before the door locks. If you miss your window, you're thirsty.
Precisely. They wanted to see who would cope better with resource scarcity. The human mice or the ancestral mice.
Who won?
Well, here's the twist. They looked at the male mice and there was zero difference. Humanized, wild type, they both performed exactly the same.
Huh. Okay. That's a bit anticlimactic.
But then they looked at the females. And the female humanized mice were operating on a different level.
How so?
Once the water got restricted, the humanized females visited the water corners 1.8 times more often than the wild types. They were relentless. And when it got really tough, when only one corner had water, they visited nearly 3 times more often.
That is a massive difference in behavior.
Right.
So having the broken human enzyme made the female mice way more motivated to find water.
It appears so. And the researchers were very careful. They thought, okay, maybe these mice are just stronger. Maybe they're just pushing the others out of the way.
Right, are they bully mice?
They checked. They did grip strength tests, run tests, no physical difference. They even did a tube test where two mice meet in a narrow tube to see who backs down. The humanized mice were not more dominant socially.
So it's not strength, it's not social dominance, it's just pure drive.
The leading hypothesis is a change in motivation or efficiency. The human metabolic state in the brain seems to trigger a different response to scarcity, specifically in females. They just keep trying, kept checking, kept searching.
I'm still stuck on the sex-specific part, though. Why only the females?
That ties back to the chemistry. The study found that female mice naturally have lower levels of the ADSL protein in their muscles compared to males.
Oh.
So they're biologically closer to the threshold where a reduction becomes impactful. The mutation just tips the scale for them more drastically.
And from an evolutionary perspective, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a female responsible for gestating or nursing offspring, your ability to secure resources during a famine is everything.
Exactly. It's the difference between your lineage continuing or ending. A genetic toggle that ramps up motivation in females during scarcity could be an incredibly powerful selection pressure.
But wait, there's more to this story. We talked about the mutation, the A429V, but you mentioned a double hit. What does that mean?
This is the part that convinces me this was no accident. We talked about the amino acid change, A429V, that changed the shape of the enzyme. But the researchers found a second change.
Okay.
They found a change in the non-coding region of the DNA, a regulatory element. Think of it like a volume knob. This specific setting, or haplotype, is found in over 97% of humans today.
And what does this volume knob do?
It turns the volume down. It reduces the expression of ADSL even further, but specifically in the brain.
Hold on. So first we got a mutation that makes the enzyme work poorly. And then we got a second mutation that says, and by the way, make even less of this crappy enzyme.
Precisely. It's a purine paradox. You have two distinct evolutionary events. One coding, one regulatory, both pushing for the exact same goal. Minimize ADSL activity in the brain.
That's not an accident. That sounds like a strategy.
It certainly looks like one. The researchers analyzed the genetics using AR Guiver D, which uses these ancestral recombination graphs to trace the family trees of genes back through time.
That's the heavy math part.
Yes. And the math found strong signals of positive selection for both changes. Evolution didn't just stumble into this. It aggressively selected for this metabolic throttling.
Which implies that having this traffic jam of chemicals, this buildup of SACAR and SIDO, must be doing something important.
Or that the reduction in purine synthesis itself preserves energy. But the buildup of substrates is the most likely driver. The question is, what does that do to a human? We know what it does to a mouse. It makes them relentless for water. But we are not mice.
Right. I don't usually run around checking corners for water bottles.
Yeah.
So did they look at actual humans?
They did. They analyzed data from modern human populations. They looked at cerebrospinal fluid samples from over 2,600 people to measure those chemicals. And then they looked for correlations with human traits.
And this is where I feel like the other shoe is about to drop. What did they find?
It's a complicated shoe. They found a correlation. High levels of SIDO, that chemical that builds up because of our broken enzyme, are negatively correlated with intelligence scores.
Wait, hang on. Negatively correlated. So the more of this human chemical buildup you have, the lower your score on an IQ test.
The correlation is about -0.13. It is statistically significant, but it's a small effect size. It's not the whole story of intelligence, obviously. But yes, the data suggests a trade-off.
This is mind-blowing. And frankly, a little insulting to my genome, so let me get this straight. We have a broken enzyme. This state was positively selected for, so it helped us survive. In mice, it makes females better at getting resources. But in modern humans, the byproduct of this state is linked to slightly lower cognitive scores.
It suggests that intelligence, at least as we measure it today, you know, pattern matching, abstract reasoning, sitting quietly, solving problems, might not have been the absolute top priority for survival 600,000 years ago.
Right. If you're the smartest person in the cave, able to do calculus on the wall, but you don't have the drive to go find water when the river dries up,
yeah,
you die.
And your genes die with you. The researchers suggest a complex evolutionary trade-off. The reduced enzyme activity provided a survival advantage, perhaps that grit we saw in the mice. And that advantage was worth the cost of potential downsides in, say, cognitive processing speed.
It really reframes that whole Neanderthals were dumb, we were smart narrative. Maybe Neanderthals had faster processors. Maybe their purine factories were running at 100% efficiency.
Yeah.
But we were just hungrier.
It's possible. Neanderthals might have been metabolically superior in terms of stability. But metabolic stability doesn't always equal survival in a harsh, changing environment. Sometimes you need a system that reacts to stress differently.
It makes you wonder what other defects we carry that are actually superpowers in disguise. We spend so much time trying to fix our biology, you know?
Precisely. We often think of health and fitness as the state of seamless optimization. But biology is all about compromise. This purine paradox shows that sometimes breaking a well-oiled machine is the only way to survive a new environment.
It's also a great reminder of how much we still have to learn from the metabolic pathways we take for granted. This wasn't a gene for bigger brain or walking upright. It was a gene for metabolic traffic jam.
And yet, it defines us. It separates us from the Neanderthals just as much as our skull shape does. It's a fundamental shift in how our brains are built.
Okay, so we've covered the broken enzyme, the motivated mice, the double hit, and the intelligence trade-off.
Yeah.
What's the one big takeaway you want people to leave with?
For me, it's the mechanism of the double hit, to see two independent changes, one in the protein, one in the volume knob, both aiming for the same counterintuitive goal. It shows how directed and powerful selection can be. It reminds us that evolution doesn't really care about clinical perfection. It cares about persistence.
And for me, it's the humility of it. We love to think of ourselves as the sleek, optimized pinnacle of creation. But this study suggests we're a collection of hacks and trade-offs that just worked well enough to keep us alive. We might have traded a bit of raw processing power for the grit to keep going when the water ran out.
A fair trade, I would say, given that we're still here to talk about it and the Neanderthals are not.
Absolutely. It leaves us with a lot to think about. Here's a thought to leave you with. If evolution selected for a broken enzyme that correlates with lower cognitive scores but better resource acquisition, what does that tell us about the real priorities of human survival over the last 600,000 years? Maybe grit matters more than wit.
A provocative thought to end on.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Switch in the dark, a quiet rewrite. One letter in the code, one turn of the light. Bridges in the pathway don't carry the same. The river runs slower, but it keeps its name. In the chambers of the mind, where the engines run low, substrate storms gather. Not a shout, just a shimmer in the wire. A calm accumulation, a quiet fire. Pure enzymes in my head, climbing up the stairs. When the enzyme sleeps, the night holds what it bears. I'm moving through the city of synapse and glow, finding what I need in the undertow. Pure old shadows fading at the edge of depth. A quieter gene, a lowered flame, yet the brain remembers the chain.